for the benefit of those with flash photography.
Hello, welcome in, and welcome to DreamWork. I, as always, am Colin Delaney. In a few moments, I will be joined by my tag team partner, Cheech. And that you heard off the beginning was a little something I put together. Sick of this thing starting with just my voice every week. So I put together a little thing there. If you like it, let me know. If you hate it, also let me know. As you know, every week here on DreamWork, we discuss the greatest tag teams of all time and what made them so great. But also, what we do here on DreamWork is Colin tries to figure out audio recording and editing as he goes. I'm making it up as I go along, people. There's even a little edit in the episode today that I would not call seamless, but I would say is good enough. Anyways, this week, we discuss my childhood favorite wrestler and his brother-in-law. And it is up to you to decide which guy is my childhood favorite and which one's the brother-in-law. That's right. Hailing from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and Reno, Nevada, respectively, Bret the Hitman Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart, they are the Hart Foundation. Ladies and gentlemen, Cheech.
That's right, it's me.
If I knew how to make sound effects, there would be like canned applause right there.
Oh, it doesn't need to be canned. I imagine people at home right now are indeed giving me an applause.
God, I hope nobody does that.
No, I hope not either.
How's it going, pal?
You know, social distancing, staying in, watching a lot of wrestling. Dude, I was thinking about it. This fun little venture, I've watched a lot of tag wrestling over this time. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of matches.
Yeah, I mean, usually like 12 to 15 tag matches per episode, usually.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, that's a whole lot. Sometimes it gets a little, itching for a singles match sometimes.
I feel like that's what TV's for, but then again, like, you know, TV's not the best right now. But I still try and dip into other stuff. Like, I still have my other side viewings.
Oh, I do too, but sometimes I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be watching this because I should be watching the team of this week, which was the Hart Foundation.
Yeah, and then, another thing they fall into, you tell me if this happens with you, that they also had like multi-mans that always catch your eye when you're going through looking for all the tag matches, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was really hopeful that there was a late era Hart Foundation, just straight Bret and Anvil tag, in like when the foundation was at its fullest. There was not one, and I was very sad about that knowledge.
No, I know. But yeah, that's a thing. When we're studying these tag teams, occasionally as you're passing through, they have these cool multi-mans. You're like, nope, I'm sticking to the tag team, just straight Bret and Anvil this week, just straight Bret and Anvil.
There's a couple of, like last week for Mikey and Tajiri, I did watch a six man that included Super Crazy. And like when we did Kai and Tai, I did have to watch at least one Kai and Tai multi-man.
No, I get it. I mean, but I try and stick to, you know, just straight tags, and then I'll note them and be like, I'll get back to those eventually.
Me too. All right, Hart Foundation. This one we kind of, it was kind of just on the fly. It was just, let's do it. You know, when in doubt, when we don't have anything clever to name the week or month after, we got to dig into our brains, and we struck on the Hart Foundation. How did you feel going into this one? Preliminary thoughts.
I was excited, like, because like we weren't sure. We didn't have anything sticky to do for a team. So I was like, all right, let's just go with a classic team. And Hart Foundation are a classic team. So I knew it'd be fun. I was looking forward to it.
Correct. I don't know. I guess I was
on the fence. I'm a huge Bret Hart fan, but a couple of years ago, I did get into a discussion with some people about how potentially Jim the Anvil Neidhart never had a good match outside of tag team wrestling.
That could be entirely possible. I don't even really know. Okay, yeah, now that I think about it, yeah. But yeah, I only think of him really as a tag wrestler, let's be honest.
The fact was disproven, though, when we found Jim the Anvil Neidhart versus Macho Man Randy Savage from a Saturday Night Main Event, which is bonkers good.
Okay, see, that's the thing. I feel like Anvil with the right person could be something great, you know what I mean? And Macho would be that guy.
Correct, which he rarely seemingly ever got. But, you know, Bret's the shining star of the team, so I think I was more focused in and honed in on Anvil while we were watching.
I mean, Bret obviously was good, but I did find myself enjoying Bret a lot because, I mean, he looks amazing in this.
Correct, yeah. Okay, so, accomplishments.
Give them.
They are two-time WWF Tag Team Champions.
Okay, because there's the thing. They had a pretty long run. That was back in the day when you had the title for a long time. So, like, two might be a little, like, is that low? But I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, their run was surprisingly long, actually. I did not realize it was so long. They started teaming in WWF in, like, it was, like, late 85.
Yeah.
And they stopped teaming in 91. So that's a 6-year stretch.
Yeah, that was impressive. Like okay, going from 18 matches of Mikey and Tajiri to this, I was like, whoa, we went from the outhouse to the penthouse.
Oh, yeah, and digging through them was crazy because, like, you don't even realize how many house shows they used to wrestle. So, like, going through their cage match was bananas.
I'm pretty sure any team you name, they've had more than 18 matches with on a house show loop, let alone Mikey and Ajiri just in their whole tag career had 18.
For sure. That's so accurate. It's not even funny. They wrestled the Rougeaus literally every year of their run multiple times.
I know, and it was fun. Actually, one of the last one I saw was one of their they started putting in time with each other. Those were some good ones.
All right, so other notable statistics, they were the runner up to the PWI Tag Team of the Year in 1987.
To whom?
The Midnight Express.
Okay, can't argue.
The crazy thing that I noticed was that's the only time they're even runner-up or second runner-up. They never won it. That's it. They were runner-up in 87.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little wild considering their last title run was in like 91, I think. Yeah, they lost the titles, was like their last match.
Wow, that is weird. You know what I mean? Especially like we said, they're a classic tag team. You'd think they would have had some years where they were number one, number one, number one.
Well, I thought at least, I was like, well, I don't see them as winning. I don't see them like having won the award. So let me check all the runners up. And they were only on there once, which I was a bit shocked to see.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's odd.
All right. They are number 37 on that PWI list of the top tag teams of the PWI years from 2003.
Wow. I thought they would have been higher because I felt like that one was a little more WWE / F biased. You know what I mean?
Well, so that's 37. That's the PWI list that has a bunch of wacky Japanese teams on it. They are number three on the Sports Illustrated list of greatest tag teams of all time.
That sounds about right. Okay, I was thinking of that list when I mentioned it. Okay, yeah, that sounds right for that list.
And the WWE put out a list of the top 50 greatest tag teams of all time, and WWE named them number two.
Okay. Oh, this is going to be good, because I have some thoughts that correlate to both those. But yeah, I assume they rank high.
The only other statistic I have is that they are 2019 WWE Hall of Famers.
Deserved so. Like I said, they were a classic team in the classic team era. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it really was a great era. When I started going through like the team, we'll get into the teams we saw them or we watched them work, but just going through the list, I was like, man, they like these tag teams are great.
Yeah, and they worked everybody. Because think about it, they had a long run, and in that time, a lot of guys got cycled into tag teams and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, let's go to it. What matches did you watch?
All right, let me see. Where did I go? All right. And here's the best part. Like, I had to put the years because they were all over the place. I got a Powers of Pain from 89. I got Islanders from 87. Then I went Orient Express 91. Then I figured I was like, oh, they're all over. Let me just try and hit every year. So then I had a Demolition in 88, a Rhythm and Blues in 90, a Bulldog and JYD in 87, which kept getting, which was, it kept popping up. So I was like, all right, I got to see it. Then we're straight up the Bulldogs or the British Bulldogs versus the Rougeaus in 89, LOD in 91. I wasn't even sure if that matchup even happened. Power and Glory, a Honky and Valentine before they were Rhythm and Blues. So it was just Honky and Valentine, another British Bulldogs, Twin Towers, a Rockers, a Brain Busters, a U.S. Express, a Strike Force, and then another Rougeaus. I was trying to get a little bit of everybody because they've had so many teams they worked.
I did the same thing. So I started as early as I can find, and as early as you can find is like job matches.
Yep.
So I watched them against George Wells and Joe Mirdo.
Okay.
We'll get into that. George Wells was a stud. I watched them against the Killer Bees. I watched them against the Bulldogs. I watched them against the Bulldogs. I watched them against Strike Force. I watched them against Demolition. I watched them against the Rougeaus. I watched them against the Rougeaus. I watched them against the Brainbusters. I watched them against the Rockers. I watched them against the Rockers a year later. I watched them against Power and Glory. I watched them against LOD. And I watched them against the Nasty Boys. So surprisingly, we hit the same teams here and there, but I think we covered a wide range between the two of us.
Yeah, man, as I was looking through, because, you know, I was looking at the matches, and I was like, okay, they've got a few teams, and I was like, oh, they've got some repeats, but then you just keep going and going, and then you're like, whoa, no, like the Islanders, I thought was an odd thing, especially because the weirdest thing was, it was Ming being a young baby face. He did, like, the Southern, like, booty shake, and the crowd went nuts, and I was like, what world am I in? But you know what I mean? They spanned so long that, you know what I mean? You went from like the Islanders with a young Ming versus in 91, they're tearing it up with the Rockers and being like, you know what I mean, super innovative and like, oh, now they're young guys. But they covered so much. It was so much fun. Okay, here's the thing. I feel like this is the best ambiance in wrestling. Like, the colors were vibrant. The crowds were hot and packed. The lighting was good. Gorilla and Jesse and who else? Even Bruno on some of them. One of the ones I heard had a superstar Billy Graham. I was like, it was the complete package at, like, in these years. Agree?
Yo, no, for sure. Yeah. A lot of Tony Schiavone on primetime.
Yeah, man. I just remember a lot of the times being like, I feel like I should be almost bored, but I'm not, because it's like, look at the crowd. Look at the lighting. Oh, they're in pink. Oh, he's in blue. Oh, he's in black. Like, everything seems so clearly defined.
All right. Well, let's get right to the question on everybody's mind. Is it better? Is their gear better with pink on top, black on bottom, black on top, pink on bottom, or all pink?
I would have to say the black top, pink bottom, just because I feel like that was the most classic. Like, there is a charm to the all pinks, not going to lie, but the half and half, I think, is just the most classic.
I agree, and I like how Bret Hart's black knee pads over the pink tights.
Yeah, yeah. He was He was such a revelation at this point. Like, watching these matches, I'm just like, gosh, he's so good at, like, one of my notes was, he's so good at taking care of himself and his opponent all at the same time.
Did you catch any of the, did you start with some of their heel stuff, or did you catch any of their, like, early heel stuff back before they even put pink on?
Yes. But for the most part, it was all over the place. Like, that was the thing. I didn't know. I would just click on a year and be like, all right, let me see what they did this year. I'd be like, oh, okay, they're good guys. Okay, now they're bad guys. Okay, now they're back to good. Now, you know what I mean? It kept going back and forth.
Yeah, so I tried to start at the I always try and start at the beginning, but then I kind of jumped around. I was like, let me start at the very beginning before they put pink on, and then I can kind of jump around and see what's up. As heels, they were the most ref shenanigan team I've ever seen in my entire life.
Okay, here, let's get into this big point then, and let me get your opinion on this. Like, okay, do you think Vince McMahon didn't trust them as heels or super trusted them, because they had every heel thing in a book. They had a manager with a weapon, and they had a heel ref, and they were both great heels. Like, they had so many heel things in their, like, arrows in their quiver. Like, it's crazy. And I was like, did Vince not trust them?
I don't know, man. Like, even watching, but like watching some of those matches, even without Jimmy Hart, sometimes they were just like, they had so many different spots to distract the ref. It was like, at times it almost is abusive. It's almost like, it's like too much. It's like egregious.
Oh yeah. In the US Express match, they put like at least 10 minute heat, where they're just beating up on Rotunda. But I think they literally go through the entire Rolodex of almost going to make the tag, and then we do something where the ref doesn't see it. Like, they had those spots in their back pocket, and they had tons of them. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Oh, P.S. I clicked on that US Express match, and I was like, oh, I'll watch this. And then I realized it was Spivey and not Wyndham, and I go, nope, I'm not watching it.
You're 1,000% correct.
I literally, I was like, oh, I'll throw this match in, that'll be fun. And then I saw it with Spivey, and I go, this match probably won't be as fun as I want it to be. I'm going to move along to Strike Force or something.
It's okay, because since it's Spivey, like, they let him do a beginning, he messes it up, and then like he just never gets in again.
Oh, well, maybe I would have liked it. I don't know. I'm not like, Rotunda's not like really checking the boxes for me either. Wyndham was the guy who I was like, oh, I'll see. I'll watch Barry Wyndham wrestle them.
All right, time out. We need to go to an aside. Cause in that match, you watch Rotunda, he could have been world champion. That Rotunda at that time in that match could have been world champion. Especially when I watched the Strike Force match and him and Martel are like similar baby faces with fire. And I was like, oh, if Rotunda went to AWA, he would have been world champ.
Oh, one of the first things I wrote for the Strike Force match was Martel is amazing.
Oh, I wrote babyface Martel is a thing of beauty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So right off the bat, like I said, I watched a jobber match first from like 85 when they first came around.
Yep.
And one of the first things I noticed is how they look like a team. They look like they're like working together, even when they're taking shines, which I thought was super interesting.
Oh yeah. They very much are like, they're very well defined in like Anvil, or at least it varied, but like he would always get cut off, but he wouldn't take heat. And then Brett would go in, and Brett was just there to tell stories, which was usually, oh, I'm the smaller guy, I'm going to get beat up by this big guy and make him look big.
Or if there's quicker guys, he was taking a bunch of arm drags and drop kicks and flip-flopping and flying around.
But that's what I'm saying. That would have been that story. If it's a little guy who's fast, he's going to take all their fast moves. It's a big guy. You know what I mean? Like, Anvil was clearly there to be like the momentum changer, and then Brett was there just to actually carry the momentum, if anything.
You know what teams don't do anymore?
What's that?
Have little powwows in the corner.
Yeah, I know. Those are always fun. Dude, even with like, at least in this era, everyone had a manager where they could stop and just lean over and be like, oh, yeah, yeah, like they're getting advice and stuff. And I was like, man, yeah. Part of me wants more managers, but then part of me is like, nah, I don't know if I want more managers.
The Hart Foundation, though, man, like, they were just using it seemingly to get in the other team's head. They would just go like, just slow everything down, walk over, have a little corner conversation, make the other team like kind of have a conversation with their own partner. And it was like, oh yeah, here we go.
Yeah. That was the one thing I also liked about this era is you could tell guys just taking their time. They're in no rush. And it's like, wow, it's kind of refreshing as opposed to, you know, like TV nowadays is boom, 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 boom. This is like, oh, it's prime time. We've got 10 minutes before the next commercial. Wrestle.
Wow. I lost you, so I didn't hear any of that, but I'm sure it was great stuff.
Yeah, it was gold. It was gold.
But so I watched them as heels first. I watched, like I said, there was like a jobber match, and then them as heels with like the Bees and the Bulldogs and Strike Force. And then I get to Demolition, and their faces, I was seeing them as faces for the first time in this exercise. And man, they're so much better as faces.
Yeah, I agree. When I watched them versus Demolition, I was like, oh, thank God, they're bringing all the movement and the speed. And even Anvil, like, you know what I mean? You automatically think, oh, okay, Brett's doing what? I was like, no, Anvil liked to get froggy too.
And also when they're heels, they're just two wrestlers, kind of. They're just two guys, even though Anvil's bigger. But when they're baby faces, the roles are so clearly defined.
Yes, yeah. I remember in one of the matches where they're good guys, I was like, oh, Animal gives Brett so much swag. It just brings it.
Yeah. Right, right. So when they're heels, they were just, you know, a team of a bigger and a smaller guy, but they just worked together. They just were heels. But when they're baby faces, Brett's the technician. Brett's the, you know, got that swagger. And then Anvil comes in and he's all fired up and he's, you know, tossing guys around and giving those big shoulder blocks. So it makes more sense and it works so much better that way.
True, but I do think their best role was probably as the bad guys getting beat up and just being ring generals and putting on good matches as opposed to, oh, we could, you know, use them to just get big pops. But it was like, man, some of their, like, I liked their heel stuff. You know what I mean? I liked it for the matches it produced. But yes, as baby faces, they were much more entertaining.
Okay, so I was going to pass this by you. Do you think that even when they were baby faces, they were kind of dictating the heels? Because I feel like the heels would wrestle the Hart Foundation like they were the Hart Foundation. Like a lot of ref shenanigans like the Hart Foundation would do, a lot of like the same like tactics the Hart Foundation was taking. Do you think that is them calling it?
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of got that. Because I was like, yeah, when they're good guys or bad guys, the matches are still very similar.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Very similar formula. I still like them better as babies, but like, okay, so they're good as babies, but they do need really good, dynamic, over-the-top heels.
Yeah, yeah. The one that was one of the things I did like about like the Twin Tower match was that you saw their ability to do more. Like Anvil for once looked small, so he had to be a little more mobile. Like, oh man, his hot tag in that, I did watch, it was from the Bret Hart collection, so he had a little thing where he talked about it beforehand. He had mentioned that all four guys were just friends, and they were like, we're never going to get this chance again. Let's just go kill it. So, like, Anvil on his hot tag is just a ball of fire. That dropkick that usually lands mid-gut hit Boss Man, a tall dude, right in the face. And I was like, oh, snap, Anvil is fired up. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Bret said they were like, fuck it, let's just go for it. So he was fired up. And, yeah, him actually having to pepper big guys as opposed to being the big guy. Yeah, it is better when they're with big, dynamic guys. And Akeem just – I started laughing almost uncontrollably because Akeem comes in and Bret arm ringers the hell out of him, and he just does boogie woogie with his legs. Now it's his sell, and I couldn't stop laughing. I don't know why. He arm ringered him so hard, his legs just started going violently flailing. I would die.
Oh, that's so not, that's. I mean, that's that sounds par for the course. Talking about that demolition match is going to bring me around to something that I realized later, but it's the demolition match is its peak usage. That Anvil slingshot into the ring is the most versatile spot in the Hart Foundation's suitcase.
Oh yeah, I mean, because you can do it to a guy who's laying down, a guy who's running at you, a guy who's standing. I think what's more versatile for them is the guy runs off the ropes and Brett kicks him in the back.
Yeah, but that's not more versatile. That's just a thing they did a lot. The Anvil thing, he could do it to two. Brett could sling him into two guys. He could get him with one guy on the run. He can get him to one guy. And in the demolition match, he did it to a dive. He slingshot Anvil over the top rope to the floor for a dive.
Because the demolition were big dudes. You got to tell that story. Bret Hart's a genius. And Anvil, you know, he's just a big high spot guy.
if I told, like, it's like 1988. And Jim the Anvil Neidhart is doing a slingshot dive out of the ring onto Smash. It blew my mind.
Actually, I'm taking back my laughing. He is the big high spot guy. He comes in and shit goes down.
Yeah, he's got a dropkick in his repertoire.
Yeah, and I like the ones he gave one of the Rougeaus a backdrop that I was just like, oh, dear God. It was as high as Shawn Michaels' one.
Oh, man, those Rockers matches. Anvil launches Shawn Michaels into the stratosphere with backdrops.
Here, let's get to it. Let's get to it. Because I was watching all these big man matches, and holy crap, when I got to the Rockers, they were a goddamn revelation. Holy crap. I don't know if it was just the match I watched, because I think it was the Saturday Night's Main Event one or whatever. Whoo! They come right out the gate, high spots, high spots, high spots. I was like, whoa, this is some... I was like, no wonder everybody loved them. But, like, no wonder the Hart Foundation loved wrestling them. Oh, it was so good.
So, yeah, you watched the Saturday Night Main Event one, which is from 90. They had one in 89 that's very similar, a little longer. They had, like, more time. It's basically the same match, but the one on Saturday Night Main Event is so much crisper.
But, man, like, okay, one of my notes in that, where was it, is after watching so much Bret Hart in these tag matches, when you see Shawn in there, you're like, oh, they most definitely are two sides of the exact same coin.
Yeah, and the Rockers match, because they're both babyface teams.
Yeah, I know. You know what I mean? Like, instantly see, like, oh, because Shawn does the same thing. He takes care of himself and his opponent at all times. Like, they're very much the same guy.
But that was the match that made me realize. And then I saw it again later on when they had to be babies, baby with LOD. They're very Edge and Christian in that way, where if they have to wrestle another babyface team, they can just play the heel role and do kind of heel things, but still be babyface.
Oh, brother, I'm freaking out. That's my big comparison. And that's why I noticed on all those lists, who are they right behind? Edge and Christian, right?
Yeah, on the... Definitely yep. on the WWE yep. one.
Yep, and I also think on the Sports Illustrated one, too, because I think Edge and Christian are two and Hart Foundation are three. Yes, the Hart Foundation or Edge and Christian were very much the Hart Foundation. Like, not so much in the equation, as I call, where it's like big man, little man, but like in the roles they served and the matches they put on, so similar.
Yeah, you like it didn't matter if they were heels or babies. You put them against another team and you're going to get a good match. They'll, you know, they'll play whatever role they have to play and they'll make it good.
Yep, that and even same with the moves. Like, remember my critique on Edge and Christian was like, oh, they always did just enough to cut the guy off. It was never super flashy and explosive. Exact same thing with the Hart Foundation. All their cutoffs usually... crappy and heelish. It's never like, oh, I hit you with a cool move. It's like, nope. A lot of times the comebacks are like slip on a banana or I'm gonna hold you and then you're gonna duck and my partner's gonna hit me. Like, just real simple basic stuff that everyone can understand. But, you know, I mean, you kind of like I was expecting more out of both, but they're both teams, but they're both so good at it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. Speaking of moves though, in how many however many matches you watched, how many times did you even see the heart attack?
Oh, yeah, I know. It was used sparingly. And a couple times, not even as a finish.
I grew up believing that the heart attack was like the Hart Foundation's finish and that they beat all kinds of teams with it. I saw them win that job match with it, and I saw them use it as a throwaway in the LOD match. And I think those are the only two times in the 12 or so matches that I watched that I even saw it.
Yeah, I know. I did remember, though, the reverse slam where Bret goes to the second and Anvil slams him on him. I was like, oh, I remember they used that a lot, too. But yeah, you would have suspected, I suspected, you would have seen the heart attack a lot more, but you didn't.
No, I saw it twice. And one time it was a throwaway move against LOD.
Okay, but can we take it aside? That LOD match was pretty damn good. Like, I'm going through my notes, and I was like, I had a lot of notes and a lot of underline, and I didn't think I was going to get that from the LOD.
No, it's a lot of fun. And they kind of play the same roles, except for LOD is, like, the definite ass-kicker baby faces. So the Hart Foundation just plays the heel role, but you've got the two big guys with Anvil and Animal, who, by the way, had a dope shine in the beginning together.
Right? I know. I was blown away how blown away I was by that match. I thought, oh, wow, this match had never happened. I go, this should be interesting. And then I was like, oh, wow, this is interesting.
Dude, Animal starts striking. striking Jim the Anvil Neidhart back to the ropes. When Anvil gets to the ropes, he blocks that strike and then strikes Animal all the way across the ring to the ropes and then send off and then duck and then duck and then double tackle. I was like, oh my God.
Yep. And then what idea? And then one gets up for a second. And he's like, okay. And then immediately they turn it around. I was like, oh, they're both giving. I was like, okay, it's not one sided. You know what I mean? Like, you always hear about the LOD being like, oh, they're just going to kill him. No, even the LOD were like, nah, let's work. Let's get in there. Let's have some fun.
No, it ruled. It ruled. So did you at any, cause I know you didn't watch, you don't watch really in order. Did you ever notice, Anvil kind of, losing a little bit of his swagger as Brett starts to kind of come up?
Not noticeably, no.
I did. I noticed it. The Brainbusters match was the first time that I started to notice it, and that's like 89. But Brett in that match is hitting like he's already like starting to do five moves of doom. You get a Russian leg sweep, you get a Manhattan, you get a snap suplex, you get the elbow. I was like, man, Brett's like almost hitting peak Brett here, and Anvil looks like he's lost a little bit of his confidence because of it.
I, in my head, I want to strike that or chalk that up to the Brainbusters just being awesome, and that being like the first time where the Hart Foundation were like, oh, we get to hit all our moves. And I think Brett's like, I actually have moves, and Anvil's like, oh, I got a shoulder tackle in this slingshot, you know what I mean? Like, because in that match, I was like, wow. It was great to see them versus technically smaller guys, and they just ping pong freaking Arn and Tully around the whole time. It's great because you actually get to see Hart Foundation like flex a little.
Yeah, I just felt like in that match, it's the first time, and I started to notice it after that in matches I was watching, that like before that, I never, because once again, I was kind of focusing on Anvil. I didn't mean to. I guess I kind of did, but and him and Brett, they appeared to be equals. You know, you knew Brett was like the technician, but there was in those early matches, you would not have been like, oh yeah, Brett is hands and feet, the one carrying this team. No, they were both equal parts. But then it seemed like around 89 going into 90, Brett is already on the rise. And I think it messed with Anvil a little bit.
Well, okay, if I remember all my DVDs and shoot interviews, and I didn't read his book, but I believe the reason is because around that time, I think they were supposed to break up, and they were kind of starting to give the shine to Brett because they were going to do something, and then something happened, so that's why they ended up staying together longer. Like, yeah, there were shenanigans where he was supposed to get a big push as a singles, and something went wrong, so then they just said, hey, let's just stick with the team for like another year or two. So I think that's why, and plus, like, you could only hold Bret Hart down so long. You know what I mean? Like, a guy that good in a system that long is eventually, you know, the cream rises to the top.
Yeah, no, you're right. For sure. But I just feel like you could almost see it in Anvil. He was all fiery and had his confidence, and then Bret starts to kind of fade. Bret starts to kind of rise, and Anvil can kind of see the writing on the wall, it looks like.
I believe that's also part of the story, is that from that point, like, Anvil kind of saw the writing on the wall, you know what I mean? And his career kind of shows it. After Brett goes on his thing, he does like the new foundation and, you know, stays around a little bit, but once again, as a team. So, I mean, he wasn't wrong in what he was seeing, but once again, you know what I mean? Like, you can't hold a rocket ship down that long.
No, for sure, for sure. It was just something that I picked it up. I didn't mean to pick it up. I just picked it up in the Brainbusters match, and then I from there on, I couldn't not notice everything I watched. I was like, oh yeah, he's not the fireball he was in the first half.
Yeah, but like I said, I mean, that would probably mess with his head. I could see it.
Yeah,
I could see it.
Yeah.
But all right, let me ask you this question, because as I was going through and appreciating how good Bret Hart was, I was trying to equate it this way, in that, like, he was probably like the best wrestler of like the late 90s in that style. So when you see him in 86, 87, 89, 91, 92 versus Perfect and all those guys, he seems so good because he technically is ahead of the curve. He's like ahead of his time. You know what I mean? Like, his wrestling style was like peak probably 96, 97, where he was the best and having great matches. So therefore, when you saw him in the late 80s and early 90s, you were like, oh, yeah, of course he's really good. My question is this. Do you think he could have transitioned to the 2000s?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
And I mean more so in a tag team sense, because as far as like the tag matches, you could tell he's a master at 80s and 90s tag team wrestling. I wonder if he could transition to almost nowadays where there's more moves. Because I'm sure he could. I'm sure if he was like our age, he would have no problem with it. But I'm just wondering. You know what I mean, like, I'm just wondering if a brain like that is only genius up until like the 90s. Once wrestling kind of changes to more of a different style, if a brain like that could adapt.
So I don't know, and I feel like my thoughts on this are swayed because Bret Hart is one of my favorite pro wrestlers of all time. Growing up, he was like my favorite. But he may have one of the worst last acts in wrestling for a guy of his like clout and ability.
Okay, do you mean like career as in like storylines and things he was in, or do you mean like his abilities?
I mean like just all around. There's maybe, so for a guy who was one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, I could barely name you five WCW matches he had that I would want to watch.
Okay, gotcha. I see what you mean now.
So his last act before he retired was not enjoyable.
Okay.
I don't know.
Let me say this then. I mean, when given the opportunity, like for example, like him and the Benoit match in WCW was a great match because it was kind of on his terms, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I wonder if, you know, further down the line, if it was still more on his terms, he probably would have been successful. But I think he was just stuck in WCW, so naturally things were going to go kind of crappy. But I still think in my head, though, like I think back to his end of WWE stuff where he was having those great matches with Austin and Undertaker. I'm just like, wow, that guy is peak right now. And I think that's it. That's his peak. I'm sure he would have done well, but I feel like his peak still would have always been 96, 97.
But that's playing the what if game, because I think WCW throws a whole hitch in the giddy up there. Yeah. And I think, had he stayed in WWE at the time, I think, yeah, we got a whole different story. I think there's plenty of life to be lived. But also, with everything that went on, you know, and this is like all that behind the scenes crap with, you know, him having like creative control and this and that, like that stuff never seems to go well. And Bret Hart's like one of the better examples of that, or one of the more prime examples of that. So I just don't know if he would have ever gotten out of his own way of himself being this, you know, mega star to let himself actually just wrestle and succeed.
Yeah, my thought more was like, okay, if like I sat down to like call a modern day tag match with like Bret Hart, like would he be a genius at it, or would he be like, okay? And part of me, that was just my wonder. I was like, boy, would he just seamlessly have just evolved like everyone else, or would he have just been like, okay, no, and still just want to do like a standard match? But like we said, we watch all these great tag matches. It was so, there was so much difference and flow, and like it just seemed like they were comfortable, and like he was a mastermind of it. So I wonder if that would have just kept on translating.
Yeah, some of those, like even some of those early ref spots, well, sometimes it got a little much. Some of them I was like, oh my God, like I'm fooled. Wow.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. And then like, or like what I really loved about like the Brainbusters match was like it was fun because they got to see like a few NWA tropes mixed with some WWF tropes in a match. And it was like, oh, Bret's a master of all these WWF stuff. And it was like, oh, here come the Brainbusters. It's like, oh, they have a whole other different style. It's gonna mesh because they're both great teams. But it was just fun seeing like what they do. They did the old school they both get Bret in a top wrist lock, and then he does the backflip, he does the arm drag, and I was like, oh my God, it's like a straight like Rock and Roll Express spot. I was like, okay, that's cool to see that in a WWF ring. And then eventually they do like their little demolition where Anvil puts him on his leg and then Brett comes with the elbow. And I was like, see, that's more WWF stuff. Like, it was cool to see the mix.
Yeah, that move actually, which is no, everyone knows that is Demolition's finish. I saw the Hart Foundation do that way more times than I saw them do the heart attack.
They may have done it more times than Demolition, or at least before they, at least before they came in.
Yeah, I kept seeing it, and I was like, man, isn't that Demolition's thing? When did Demolition come around? Because I feel like I've seen him do it way more times than I should have at this point.
Yeah, but that was back in the day where, like, for example, like you said, Heart Attack suddenly was a move that got kicked out of, and I was like, what world are we in?
Yeah, well, it got broken up. Let's not – it didn't get kicked out.
Well, yeah.
I literally wrote, they hit the Heart Attack, exclamation point on that LOD match, because I started noting, I'm not seeing this move that is their move.
Yeah, no, they didn't do it that much. I think I saw them only. I think I only saw them actually win once. I only saw it a couple times. They actually won with it a couple, like once, definitely.
I only saw them beat jobbers with it. I only saw them beat jobbers with it.
I'll try and find it in my notes, but somewhere in there, I was like, "Oh, heart attack! Oh no, yeah, they beat the Bulldogs with it. That's right. Here, Superstars, November 29th, 1986. My notes are Dynamite equals higher high spots, and then it's Jimmy." Hart distracts Danny Davis, who's reffing, but is the heel ref, so that they can go behind the ref's back and set up the heart attack 1, 2, 3.
I must have missed that one. I caught a couple Bulldogs matches. There's so many Bulldogs matches.
Okay, what did you think of them? Because maybe, I don't know, I always thought they were they're touted as being revolutionary, but I watched it, I was like, it seems like good tag matches. Unfortunately, you can see Dynamite's a little beat up, like they're almost hiding him a little bit, and I was like, oh, that's probably why.
Yeah, I made note that the commentary really puts over realism in these matches. Lord Alfred Hayes and Gorilla Monsoon are so good at like pointing out, making them just sound so much more important, and like,
yes,
putting more emphasis on like little things to make it like it's a real fight.
Yeah, like I remember they gave they did like the whip in reverse, and then Anvil gave the big corner or shoulder spot into the gut, and then like Rougeau just doubled over and like they put it over huge. They're like, oh my god, look at him, he's been cut in half, and they just put over so big. And I was like, wow, yeah, they really do, like they really do add to the match. Can you believe that the commentary adds to the match?
Yeah, like when Bret Hart does like the holds the legs spread and then kicks him in the midsection, like I can't remember if it was Lord Alfred or Gorilla Monsoon, he just like puts over how like having the legs up and having them in a vulnerable position allows Bret Hart to really drive it home. And I was like, man, that's such good commentary that really makes me feel like that was like an impactful move and not just a kick to the stomach.
Once again, like I said, I feel like at this time the ambiance of wrestling was at an all-time high. Especially, I forget, oh, it was WrestleMania 5 is where I noted, because it was the glitz, the glamour, it was them in their pink, it was Honky Tonk Man doing his, Honky Tonk Man brought his working shoes, but he would sell big anyway, but he was selling super big, and he was in the powder blue tights, and then Greg Valentine had the bleach blonde hair, he had the black tights, but then he had the evil shin guard that he would move when he was going to do the figure four. And I was like, oh, it's so many little things. Like the megaphone was a huge deal. You know what I mean? That always found its way in there somehow. All these little things. The Matilda the Bulldog attacking Jimmy Hart before the match. That's an amazing high spot. You know what I mean? It's just all the ambiance was just on point.
Yeah. And then I love because they kept putting it over that after Jimmy Hart left the Hart Foundation, the Harts basically feuded with all these teams that Jimmy Hart was like coming out with.
Yeah, that's in my notes. Where is it that the with Jimmy and then without Jimmy against Jimmy's guys storyline went for years? Like, they didn't always play it up per se, but it was always like they could always be like, oh yeah, you know, he used to manage them, and then like, oh yeah, that's why they got a little animosity and stuff. It was always great.
Yeah, it's great. All right. What made the Hart Foundation great?
Okay, I say I I dubbed them they're the best equation tag team, where you're like, all right, I've got a small and fast guy. What do we need to cover the bases? All right, I'll get a big and powerful guy. Like, I feel like they were the first blueprint for that type of setup. Like, others had did it, but it didn't go as well as when they did it. I feel like they were, like, the blueprint for that type of tag team.
Yeah, I don't think there's a tag team like them back in that day. And they had so many tag teams, but they didn't have so many tag teams that could just wrestle any tag team, no matter heel, face, big, small, combination of the two. They really could wrestle literally any team on the roster.
Yeah, and you'd think that'd be on Brett. I noticed it even more with Anvil, like especially like in the Twin Towers match where he always plays the big guy, and now suddenly he's not the big guy. He could still do that. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a hat that they could put on that they didn't excel at. Like, oh, you want them to be little good guys or little bad guys? Good. You want them to be the, like, I like the matches where they were even a little more fierce. And I was like, oh, okay, there's an extra wrinkle. They can beat guys up on the outside. They could beat guys up on the inside. They could do it all.
No, you said earlier that you like them better as heels. I prefer them as baby faces. But I think if we, the best of both of those worlds is when they're baby faces, but they're wrestling other baby faces.
Yeah, those matches are really fun. The face,
because you get them,
the rule.
Yes, you get them kind of playing the heel role, but they still have the dynamic of the baby face team.
Yeah, and then it was especially those face matches in front of those crowds were great because the crowd just didn't know what to do other than just keep going crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Nowadays, baby face is the crowd doesn't know who to boo, so they don't know who to cheer. Back then, it was like, we'll cheer everybody.
Yeah, they just kept cheering and cheering. And that was the other thing. They were, once again, what we've noticed with all these teams that we've been covering, and why, one of the things that makes them great, they're awesome at the crowds they're in front of. Like, it helped that they had a heel manager and a heel ref and a heel weapon and things like that. But like, they had that crowd up and down. I accidentally watched the match. I just thought, oh, Strikeforce, cool. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a good match. Oh, wow, this is a really good match. Holy crowd. This crowd is going bonkers. And they were like, oh, yeah, title switch. I go, holy crap. No wonder the crowd's going bonkers. It totally like reconceptualized the match for me. And I was just like, wow, what an amazing match. And then I was like, oh, because they had the crowd in the palm of their hands. Like, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, and there's also something to be said for, like, the chemistry of Brett and Anvil and the kind of natural chemistry that they had together.
Oh, yes, definitely. Like I said, they elevated each other. That's what made them great. You know what I mean? Brett was just a technician, but then Anvil gave him swag. Anvil was just a big guy, and now he's with the technician, so now he seems even more technically proficient that he's part of this technically proficient tag team.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. Yeah, they're, I mean, Heart Foundation. Once I got towards the end and I realized that they were just like the Edge and Christian mold of just could literally do, they just did whatever was asked of them and they could be great at it. I was like, oh yeah, man, how many other teams could you name off the top of your head that are like that?
No, I know. They were just so multifaceted.
Yeah. Wild. So that all being said, how would we wrestle them? Or beat them?
I think regardless, it would be fun. Let me see. What did I have? Oh, here's make it a no DQ match, because a lot of those matches ended in DQ. That way, the megaphone being used, it's fine. That way, if Danny Davis is being a jerk, it's fine. That way, if Jimmy Hart jumps up on the apron and I punch him in the face, it's fine. So we got to get that, because they're just way too good at those shenanigans. So we got to make it no DQ. And we then need to set a trap, because one of the tropes I kept seeing a lot was if one held me in place and the other one came, I was able to get out of the way easily. So we just got to set up a trap where Anvil just keeps bonking the hell out of Bret Hart, and then we just pin Anvil. Or we pin Bret from all the bonking.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have to get Anvil to wipe out Bret is how I think we'd have to beat them, because anytime that would happen, it was usually like a serious, like, Anvil runs into him and Hitman goes flying into the guardrail. In the early ones, back before there were guardrails, he like knocked a whole barrier over. It was wild. So if we can get them Comedy of Errors knocking into each other, I think we got a chance, and we got to out ref shenanigan them.
Okay, that's going to be tough, but the them hitting each other didn't seem pretty a normal occasion, so I think we just need to outsmart them into doing it way more than normal, and then, yeah, we got a chance.
Okay, agreed. All right, and that was the Hart Foundation, Cheech.
You know it. What is it? The pink and black attack, baby.
Join us next week for the new foundation. I'm just kidding. Somebody on Twitter suggested that we do a whole month of Mick Foley teams. And I was like, what? How many Mick Foley teams really are there? Could we do a whole month?
Yeah, I don't think we could.
The Rock and Sock connection? Him and Mikey? I think that's all we got.
Oh, is it wrong that I immediately went to him and Barbarian? Because I think I'm at that point in WCW where it's the Bill Watts era and he's kind of the manager for Barbarian. So I was like, that's where I'm at.
We could definitely do it with Anvil, though. I think Anvil had enough tag team partners. We could do a whole Jim the Anvil Neidhart month.
Yeah, he definitely had some. There are a couple guys you could do. There are some guys you could probably do 2 months worth of. You know what I'm saying?
I like the borderline sigh that came out of you before you said yes to a month of Anvil matches.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was just trying to think in my head. I was like, he doesn't have as many tag team partners as Buff Bagwell.
Well, that's true. That's true. Buff Bagwell will be his own entity. We haven't done a single Buff Bagwell team yet.
The problem is because they were all short term. Like, they were great. And then again, you know what I mean? Well, we did the Unholy Alliance with only 18 matches. So, I mean, anything's up for grabs. But, yeah, he never had, like, a super duper duper long term teammate.
Yeah, I don't think we haven't doubled a wrestler yet, even, right?
No, that's why. Because as the was saying, or whatever Twitter was talking about, tag team wrestling rules, man. There's plenty of tag teams to do. So we don't got to worry about digging into X-Pac's 7 other teammates or Kane's 7 other teammates, because they did. We covered it. We can find new teams eventually. It's going to happen, though.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, that was the Hart Foundation, and we will be back next week for another team that we totally don't know who we're doing yet. So, find out next week when we also figure it out at the same time.
Adios.